Welcome! Yep, you found it. Here it is, once again, the Pirate Monk Podcast from SamsonSociety.com. I'm Nate Larkin. David Mullen is taking a hiatus, but I'm here. Folks, we have a celebrity guest host today. Brad Stein is with us. Hey, Brad.
I'm confused. I heard it was some kind of pirate broadcast, so I have an eye patch and a parrot, and nobody else is dressed up. I feel like an idiot. I should have wore pants. I'm completely confused.
Oh, man.
I didn't get the memo. What is this monk thing? No, I'm kidding. I read the book. It's wonderful. I understand. How are you doing, Nate?
I'm doing well, Brad. And thanks so much for coming on. You're showing great courage.
That's true. That's true. Memorial Day and, good time to use the freedom of the airwaves to talk about the freedoms that we've been given by God in this country. So I wouldn't know anywhere else I'd rather be unless it was with my wife, you know.
Okay, let's not go there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So anyway, it's Brad,
it's me,
and we are here, of course, the man who makes the magic happen is our fearless engineer, Mondo.
You know, if you'd like to acquire a Mondo, it's $9.95. Five easy installments. Just call now. Get a Mondo.
The Mondo action figure coming out quickly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, we got a lot to do this morning here on Memorial Day, Brad. Mm-hmm. We've got letters from listeners coming up. Okay. We've got the song of the week. We're going to be talking on the telephone with a girl who found that it's much easier to get into porn than to get out of it.
Hmm. But she's on the phone, right?
She is on the phone.
That's going to make it a lot easier for us, that's for sure.
But first, you know, I don't know how many of our listeners know you or
four,
know of you.
Four know you. The rest have no idea and could care less. But four guys are really excited right now that I'm here.
For those of our listeners who don't know you, let's rewind. Let's go back to the beginning.
Okay. I feel like I'm being hypnotized. Hey, I don't smoke anymore. It's amazing. Back to the beginning. Well, how far back do you want me to go?
Well, where were you born? Where did you grow up?
Oh. Well, actually, I was born in Indiana, a very, Midwestern state. Had, grandparents that were farmers and really came from that world. But really, when I was young, about nine, we moved to Southern California. So most of my life was in Southern California growing up. And then 8 years ago, I moved to Nashville. So and that's where I met you. And that's when I think I completed your life. I'm not mistaken.
So did you grow up in a Christian home, Brad?
I did. My dad had grown up in a very, very, very Christian home, and so he had, consequently, he was nowhere near the church by the time I knew him. But, he was never against my faith, and we would go to church and whatnot, but he was less engaged, at least for most of my younger life.
He'd been wounded by church, would you say?
Well, I think, I don't know if the church had wounded him. Of course, he came out of a time that was, pretty conservative, and he was in Indiana, and, and it was a, every Wednesday night, everything, can't go to the movies, can't,
Right.
So I think it just, you tell somebody, everything about this faith thing is about what you can't do.
Right.
You're finally looking for, an apple tree as soon as possible. I want some fruit here that I'm not supposed to have. I think that, but frankly, towards the my dad died about 10 years ago, but he towards the end of his life, he did kind of get a rebirth and came back to the church and really reconnected to that and thank God for that. My mom was always much more, I think, part of the Christian experience, praying for us, putting us up. Matter of fact, I speak about being from Indiana, but I was conceived in Germany.
Oh, my.
Actually, yes, exactly.
Your father a serviceman?
Well, I'm really not at liberty to give you that kind of information. That's exactly what happened. My dad was in the Army, and he was back, so he went to Germany back when Elvis was there. Actually, he was there at the same time Elvis was there.
Wow.
But my dad didn't get nearly the publicity. I don't know what it was. He had a falling out with Ed Sullivan. Something about puppets. But More puppets, said Ed. And my dad said, I won't resort to that. But he was there. My mom went to visit him. And now you understand, they were very young. My parents were unusual. They wanted to get married, and their parents wouldn't let them. So they, uh-huh. So in the 50s, the easy way to get out of that is to get pregnant. So mom and him made a plan to get pregnant, and I had my sister, and so they got married. So they're young. I mean, my mom was maybe 17, you know, 18 years old. My dad was 18, you know, and she flew to Germany to visit him while he was there. And being a couple,
that's right.
You know, young, right. You know, farm kids,
that's right.
From Indiana. Apparently, they couldn't find anything to do in Germany. Nothing to do at the Bavarian Alps, so they decided to make me.
Yeah.
And so, if you believe in life at conception like I do, then I'm actually from Germany. I'm from Germany, so which is probably
that
why
explains.
The first 6 months of my life I only ate cream bratwurst, but. And my first lullaby was the beer barrel polka, but that's another story. But I'm from there, but when my mom came back, my mom did a devious thing, very evil, devious thing. She said to God, when she found out she was pregnant, if you will give me a son, I will dedicate his entire life to your service.
Oh.
Now, she didn't ask me. So there's no pressure there. Thanks, Mom. Because the thing about God is when you dedicate your life to him, your whole life, he takes you serious.
Yeah.
It's like being made in the mafia. He doesn't let you out until he kills you.
That's right.
So I was kind of destined, you know, to ministry, certainly. I mean, I truly believe that God takes covenants and oaths very seriously.
Uh-huh.
And even though my mom didn't know what she was doing, it meant a lot to her, you know, that she wanted, you know, this child that she could dedicate. So she always had more of a spiritual element, even though she had her prodigal journeys and her mess ups like we all do, we're all broken. But she was certainly much more of the foundation for my faith and laying that into her children than my dad. But I became a Christian in fourth grade when we had moved to California. I with every head bowed and every eye closed,
yes,
I raised my hand and said, I'll accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. And so when you become a Christian, you know, in fourth grade, it's your journey is a long time.
Yeah.
With God. Are we in a submarine? What
yes.
was that? Okay. I thought that sonar just went off. It's like, dive. Oh, it's his cell phone. That's right. The host of the show didn't turn off his cell phone. Can you be even less professional next time, Nate?
I just want to impress you with the fact that somebody actually texted me.
No, yes, yeah. Exactly. It was a butt text, by the way. He did it to himself. Yeah. It's Nate from Nate. What was I talking about? Now I've got completely confused because of your texting. I got saved at fourth grade.
In the fourth grade.
So you're young and makes – so you know God a long time.
Yeah.
But it makes for a real boring testimony. Because I was a church kid.
That's
now,
right.
So
sure,
all
yeah,
I cared
exactly,
about,
yeah.
I would long for the testimonies. I was addicted to heroin. The Lord freed me, and I'd be like, "Oh, if I was addicted to heroin." I mean, it was like that's a great testimony.
Sure,
I want
yeah.
that guy's test. So yeah. I found myself coveting other people's testimony. Yeah. I think for me, it's two cents.
Yeah.
But I grew up with that sort of concept. It was always something important to me. I remember going to Christian bookstore, you know, I'm 13 years old, walking, you know, a few miles to it and getting tracks, the chick
yeah.
tracks. I love the
oh,
chick tracks.
Oh, yeah, baby.
And all the
remember
books
those.
And stuff. Yep. Yeah, and all that stuff. So it was always very much a part of my life. I've never been able to escape it. I've never been able to. I've certainly had my own prodigal journeys. I've certainly made my mistakes. But I was destined for this tribe.
Well, but how does a church kid.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by this because my story in some ways is very similar to yours.
Mm-hmm.
How does he wind up doing comedy in Southern California?
Oh, well, it gets even more convoluted, unfortunately. Well, my parents got divorced. And so
How old were you then?
The first time, because my parents got divorced twice.
Oh, nice.
They didn't want to completely destroy me in one fell swoop. They wanted to do it twice so that they could make sure I'd be in therapy for the rest of my life. I was about eight the first time. They reconciled.
My. Yeah.
And then they moved to California, and then eventually it happened again. They re-divorced. So it was very
that's
very hard. Destructive.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you had a sister. Any other siblings?
I have two younger brothers as well.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
And so, yeah, it's – I mean, it's – you know, there's no way to make it any easier. Divorce is destructive. It is about the worst type of child abuse, because, you know, you, when you're a young kid, you have nowhere else to go to find the sense of safety,
mm-hmm.
a sense of protection, a yeah. sense of somebody that promises to always be there and protect you and lead you and love you and care about you. And when that covenant is broken, it's like a sucker punch, man. You have nowhere to hide with that because you're a kid. You don't have any perspective. You don't know how to defend yourself from this kind of deep, horrific pain and brokenness of this covenant. So it messes you up, and you deal with it in different ways, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that comedy maybe was one way of defending myself. You know, a lot of comics will talk about, you know, they were short or they were picked on, and so they found comedy as a way to, to defer the pain or to maybe get the ingratiate themselves with the bullies and so forth. It's a defense mechanism, you know, way to defend yourself. So that was really, you know, but the beginning of it, some serious pain. Matter of fact, because of the fact that I'd have to travel back and forth, you know, to my parents, you know, there's that terrible sense of having to leave one to see the other.
Yeah.
So it's like this reopened wound every time, because it's like, this isn't supposed to be like this. You're supposed to be together. And I remember sitting on a tarmac in Indianapolis, tears streaming down my face. I'm leaving to go back to see my dad, because my mom moved back to Indiana with my brothers and my sister. And I just said, I remember sitting in this airplane saying, I will never feel pain again.
Mm.
I'm 13 years old. I made a choice to not feel again.
Yeah.
So I could survive.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
You build a big...
You can cut the cord. Yeah.
You can thick wall around your heart, and it works. No pain comes in. But what you don't know is if you can't receive pain, you can't receive love.
Yeah.
Because it... In a broken, fallen world, love is effective and powerful only because it can potentially come with pain, and will, even if people don't do it maliciously.
Right.
You're going to lose a loved one.
Yes.
You know, the things are going to happen
because
of this thing called love, this commitment to the fact that maybe somebody actually cares and loves you and will always be there for you. And so it comes with a price. It's worth it, but it's extremely painful. But the wall also is two-sided, so you also can't let out things. You can't let out trust, the number one thing.
Yeah.
Community.
Yeah.
Connection.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I can't trust in it. Yeah. There's no way. I've seen what it's like to think somebody's going to be there like that should never go anywhere. I only go so far in the relationship, even if it's subconscious, because I have to control this so that I can't be brutalized again with what happened. So it is absolutely a devastating thing. And, you know, if you are thinking about getting divorced out, you know, I'm telling you, this is where you man up and say, you know what, God, you're going to have to help us. I mean, I know there's some tragic and difficult things out there for people, but if anything that you can do to defeat that, to fix that, to reconcile that, if you've gotten divorced, I tell people this, and you both aren't remarried, I'm saying your redemption can come from reconciling, going back and saying, you know what, let's do this right.
Mm.
You can't believe what it can do for your kids, you know. And so I really, if you have a chance, you try to fix that thing. I have to say that because it's because what it did to me. If you haven't come from divorce, it's hard to know what that means.
Yeah, yeah.
And so forth. But senior year in high school, I moved back to be with my mom because my dad had remarried.
Yeah.
And I wasn't getting along with that, with the stepmom. And so my junior, senior year, I went there. And a friend of mine's dad owned a restaurant in this little town that I was from. And so...
In Indiana.
It's literally two stoplight town, still there.
Okay.
And my mom lives there still. And so he owned this little restaurant. And I asked him that. At that time, I had been involved with, for many years, magic, sleight of hand.
Oh, yeah. Oh!
I was always interested in that.
Okay.
And
all
so
right.
I had taught myself that through books and things.
Yeah.
And I asked him, could I come into the restaurant once a week and... don't have to pay me, and I'm just going to put little cards on the table, say, you know, I'll come to your table for $3 and do magic tricks.
Yeah,
it's like, nowadays it's called street magic, but at that time it was called close-up magic.
Right,
stuff
sure.
like you see David Blaine do or whatever, that
right,
kind of thing.
Right.
So he said, yeah, and so I went in, I put my little cards down, and of course, no one had ever heard of magic at their table, you know, in a farm town in Indiana. So nobody ever called me. And nobody had $3 in that town. Or they wouldn't have been at the $2.99 buffet. But I'd go up and just ask them, hey, can I do some tricks for you? I just wanted to show them what I could do.
Right.
And it was the beginning of my entertainment, you know, wanting to get in that business. I believe that God had called me from the beginning with my mom's reckless dedication of my life to her in the womb.
Yeah.
That, you know, I believe we're all called to the same thing. Every human being has one purpose in life. Mm. It's to know God and to tell his story. That's the only reason we're here.
Yeah.
It's not to work. It's not to make money. It's not to have family and everything. Those are the results of and go with the relationship with the Creator.
Yeah.
But in the end, we die alone. It's just between us and God.
Yeah.
What happens to him and his son or his daughter. And so everybody is called to that place.
Yeah.
But not everybody certainly will listen.
Yeah.
Not everybody will do it. But God also will give you the gifts that will be the package that will deliver this message. And mine is in entertainment. It's in the arts. It was first magic, and then I would always do it like comedically.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of led to me going into comedy clubs and doing kind of a comedy magic show. And then it just sort of evolved into a comedy. I really found that more even intellectually stimulating, because now it's just my mind and my words. I don't even have props to try to. So it was fun.
So did that start with patter around the magic, and you found
pretty
you
much
could make
that's exactly
laugh?
That's exactly what it is. The magic gave you a place to bail out if you were eating it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, okay. They're not laughing. Oh yeah. Well, watch this then. It's the Ace of Spades. And so you know, it gave you a place to go and experiment with how to do this thing with your intellect and doing it monologically. And so that kind of led to other things, and now these many years later, you know, I've been acting in numerous films. Now I got one coming out in November, a Christmas film called Christmas with a capital C. Matter of fact, you can go on to IMDb and put it into the search bar, Christmas with a capital C, and the trailer's up for that. We filmed it a month ago in Alaska, so it's beautiful.
Sweet.
So it's going to be an amazing film. And I did one last year called Sarah's Choice, a pro-life film that Rebecca St. James starred in. I was in that. So I've been doing more of those and writing all these different things that I just didn't realize that would be my life.
Yeah.
But I believe that God called me to Nineveh, you know, in the beginning.
Yeah.
And that this was the way I was supposed to minister to people. And I'm still just figuring parts of that out.
Wow. Well, when we come back, I want to talk with you about
Where are we going?
Promise Keepers and men's events. We're going to step out for just a minute, but we'll be right back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Oh, a pirate's life is a wonderful life, a roving over the sea. Give me a career as a buccaneer, it's the life of a pirate for me. Oh, the life of a pirate for me.
And we're back. So, Brad.
Yes. Yes, Nate.
You have done some monstrous, huge events, stadium events.
Yes.
With that legendary movement, Promise Keepers, back in the day. How many of those things did you do?
Well, I the first year I ever did it was 2003, and I did all of their events, and then they brought me back for 2004, did all their events, then they brought me back in 2005, did all their events, then they realized they'd been making a mistake the last 3 years and didn't bring me back in 2006, but then they realized they made a mistake by not bringing me back, so they brought me back in 2007, did all their events, and then they realized, what are we doing, and they stopped bringing me back. And now Promise Keepers doesn't exist. So I think that tells you a little bit of something, doesn't it, Michael?
Great, finally, an explanation for
that's what happened. The demise of Promise Keepers was directly related to not continually using Brad Stein at all times. You know what? They were a great group of guys. I met some of the most wonderful men there, speakers. From, you know, Jack Hayford to, who else? That was it. Just Jack. Me and Jack did a whole bunch of stuff. Just wonderful. I'm totally blanking on people's names, but great people that would speak, and great people that were behind it.
Yeah.
You know, the first time I did it was in Lubbock, Texas. I had never been to a Promise Keeper event.
I've never been to Lubbock, Texas.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's from Buddy.
Yeah,
Buddy,
sure, Buddy's
Holly,
town, yeah.
From there. But I didn't. I had never been to one. So the first Promise Keepers event I ever saw, I was speaking at.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember being backstage and being, you know, hyped up as a comic.
Yeah.
Thinking, you know, I'm just, they've never done comedy before. And juggling and interpretive dance.
That's right.
But not
at least
comedy.
Not intentional comedy.
That's right. That's right. And so I was, you know, thinking, what, I'll do this and I'll do that. But it was funny. It was maybe 6,000 men. And it's, you know, Lubbock. It's pretty hardcore Texas. This is the real deal.
These are,
you know, I mean, you know, that's what I love about Texas. The men are there in church packing. And, you know, how about, you know, amen. And now if you'll change your clips, you're in a 9mm. We'll be going to Psalms. I remember looking at these guys and I'm thinking, this thing that kind of came over me was, there's a guy out here right now whose wife just left him.
Yeah.
There's a guy here right now who's addicted to porn. There's a guy out here right now that's gay.
Yeah.
There's a guy out here right now that doesn't know, you know, this is his last chance.
Yeah.
To see if there's a God that loves him.
Yeah.
I mean, I just had that sense that this is more than just a get together.
Yeah.
And it was at that time that I really felt that God was telling me, I want you, I'm not a theologian.
Yeah.
I don't have a doctorate, you know, I'm not a, you know, pastor.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
I'm a moron. I'm like you people. And so, I wanted to be that. I wanted to be a layman.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have said, you know what, I'm on the same journey, guys.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I don't believe I belong here any more than anybody here, but I'm here.
Yeah.
So let me tell you my story. Let me do what I can do. Here's all I got.
Yeah.
But let me try to lift you up, because if there's one thing that has bothered me about men's ministries and about things that involve men, even within the church environment, it's that they're not lifted up enough.
Yeah.
You know, Mother's Day comes along.
Yeah.
We get out the silks. We're hanging silk draperies. We got flower petals. You know, we are just, we're, you know, oh, angels. We bring in the Vienna Boys Choir to sing as they walk in. We give them roses. We can't tell them enough about how crucial it is that women exist on the face of the earth. And they are important.
That's right.
And they are. God bless our mothers.
As
and
well
Lord
we should.
Knows
celebrate
that every boy needs a little mom to, you know, to take care of his knee when he scrapes it. God bless them.
Yeah.
They're lifted up for being women of virtue and valor. Great. Father's Day.
Yeah.
Today we're going to learn about how you can be a better father.
Yeah.
How you can be a better leader. What is your role?
Yeah.
As the, it's like, wait a minute. What happened to just lifting me up?
Yeah.
Just telling me how great I am that I'm male.
Yeah. Yeah.
That God made me male.
Yeah. Yeah.
That he gave me testosterone instead of estrogen.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Why do we continue to propagate this cultural concept that there's something intrinsically wrong with being masculine?
Mm-hmm.
That something is suspect and must be reeled in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, granted, I'm a follower of Christ, so we're broken, we're fallen. I understand that there's things that we can't just, that we desire to do that are sinful and are wrong, and that we have to discipline. So I'm not acting like there's a carte blanche on your life, that as a man, there's nothing that there's no parameters. But the fact that, you know, we like to blow stuff up, there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with stuff starts on fire and we laugh.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with laughing at the guy once the anvil falls on his head. We like these crazy things that make us men. The way we connect, the way we bond, the way we need each other is not like women.
Yeah. Yeah. That, my friend, is a fundamental truth.
Yeah.
Even the women listeners to this broadcast tell me.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know there'd be women listeners. Forget everything I just said. I love you women. Mothers. I love mothers. M is for the million things she gave. Okay, go ahead.
No.
It was just guys.
And I think, now, we'll get some letters, and we'll find out exactly what they think. But my suspicion is that the women listening will agree with what you just said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because women have a fundamental sense of fairness.
I think so. I think so. As long as they get the shoes they want. But I think they do. I think that what one of the things about Promise Keepers, like when we're going back to them, was, you know, what I learned from them more than anything was that God gave me a resonance with men. He gave me a way to communicate that they liked. He gave me something of a rawness and a real love, which is like you.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things I respect about what you do. When you lay it out and just say, this is there, I ain't hiding nothing, which is very much not an American male thing you're normally taught, is to be very open and raw and vulnerable to another man.
Yeah.
But what we don't understand is that's where our strength comes.
Yeah.
Our strength comes from the courage to expose your weaknesses and say, but I'm still fighting, baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is going to perhaps heal you.
Yeah, yeah.
If there's anything that I'm getting from God, is that the pain that we go through in life, the junk that we, as Christians, as followers, should be embraced, because God is honoring us with that pain to say, as soon as you get through this, I want you to go teach this to others so you can get 10,000 through this.
Yeah.
I'm going to honor you with this drudgery.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you will heal others with it. Are you ready to man up and do that? Because you know what? I happen to do that with my son too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I let the whole world's junk come on him so that many could be set free.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's your turn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
It's not my preference.
Yeah.
But it's the difference between a mother hug and a father hug.
Yeah, yeah.
Mother puts her arms around a boy to protect, to shield, to be like the hen that covers so that I will take all the blows. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's half of God. I mean, God made us male and female, so he must have this feminine attributes.
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with that. It's a beautiful thing. Father hug feels strength. You feel courage. But you feel a sense of warriorship in that we're in this together. The father says, I'm sorry you're hurt too, son.
Yeah.
And then he says, now stand up, brush yourself off, and let's get our butts back in the game.
Yeah.
That's a different than a woman.
Yeah, yeah.
He's throwing you back out there and saying, now take another hit.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll be here.
Yeah.
I'll catch you. I'll walk with you.
Yeah.
I'll fight. If it's too much for you, I'll come in and take over.
Yeah.
But I expect you, son, to be able to pass this on. That's the beauty of masculinity. That's the amazing part about it. God didn't, you know, he called us to be that.
Yeah.
This isn't misogynistic. It's the way it is. Men start continents. We create declarations of independence.
Yeah.
We do things that women don't do because of the strength and the way that we are driven. It's the way we are. We can't, I'm not saying we can do it without women or they're not equally important enough, obviously.
Yeah.
But I shouldn't have to qualify.
Right.
Every time a guy does something that there's something, but don't forget the women. You know what? It's our turn. This is what we do good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pray for us. Lift us up. Do whatever. And so I learned from Promise Keepers about that, wanting to connect to men, about wanting to inspire them, about wanting to show my junk to them so that maybe it would help them be able to show their stuff to others so that they can get healing. So, because what happens is to reveal your stuff to another man is not to become demeaned in front of him or less than him.
Yeah.
But what you're actually telling him is trusting him as a brother in arms to say, I'm going to let you shoulder half of this burden, carry it with me.
Yeah.
And walk with me for a while. And by the way, when you fall down and stumble, I'll pick you up. So you better handle along this now.
Yeah.
Because one day you're going to need me to do that. And that's nothing but. And we see it. Where do we see it? Not necessarily as much in the church, though we should, as we see it in sports.
Yep.
And in the military.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where they are absolutely committed to each other because they cannot win without each other.
Yeah.
And they have a common goal.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? We have a common goal.
Yeah.
As followers of Christ, God said, from the moment you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior, from day one, you will have an enemy that will do nothing. It will not rest until you're dead.
Yeah.
That's all he wants you to do.
Yeah.
And so, if he's going to come after you anyways, you got a choice. Put your shield up, get in a corner, and try to survive life. Or say, you're going to come at me anyways? I'm throwing back.
Yeah, yeah.
An offensive Christian is what we're missing in America. And it's what I'm trying to bring back into the ministry that I'm doing with men and giving them that strength of finding their testosterone again and knowing that is a gift from God.
Well, Brett, I remember becoming aware of your existence. For a while there, it seemed like it all happened in a week for me. Brad Stein was everywhere. I saw your face above the fold on USA Today. I think I heard you on NPR on Fresh Air. Did you do a Fresh Air interview?
I did indeed.
And it was, and then all of a sudden, there you were in freaking Franklin, Tennessee.
I know.
And you were talking about pulling together an experiment, a prototype, a conference for men, and we wound up dreaming about it, doing it with some great guys, something called God Men.
Yes.
Which was a great experiment.
It was.
Yeah. What do you, but that was how long ago?
3 years ago, was it? 4 years?
Yeah, something like that. And the dream has not died.
No. No.
What do you think? What are you thinking of these days?
Well, God Men was simply, it was very simple.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to provide an event for men that was unique. That what we weren't trying to copy Promise Keepers. We were just trying. I knew that I had a lot of men that were fans of, of mine, and as a comic, but also. Just like what I spoke to them, I guess I encouraged them and inspired them. And so we thought, what if we were to find different men who are really have fought the good fight and are willing to really be real and open and try to do something that is so unlike what we're comfortable with in men's events that maybe something amazing would happen.
Mm.
And I even did a video, if you remember, because you were there at the first one.
I do remember the video.
I do remember the video. But in the video, I did say this, and I wish every men's event, I wish every church in America would hear this, because I think it's from God, man. I said, judge nothing that we do or say tonight. Judge nothing. Don't, you know, take your denominationalism, set it at the door. Walk in just as a man seeking God, and judge nothing. Give us the permission to do it wrong, to find out how much further we could go and how far God would take us if we didn't get so hung up on keeping it safe.
Yeah.
Because if your Christianity is safe, it's not Christian.
Because
Christianity is the most dangerous idea that has ever existed on earth, because it claims to be the ultimate word that defines everything about who we are as Christians. The most important word in Christianity is not love, truth.
Spoken like a true prophet.
Truth. It is the totality of reality. Every time you get in your car, every time you go to work, every time you go on the news, every time you vote, every time you do anything, it's based on the truth that God is in the universe, created a universal law, had an original plan and intent. We fell, and He redeemed us. And from now on, it's trying to get back to Eden. We're not going to get there. We're going to get, you know, the New Jerusalem will come. Well, it'll come. But it's trying to reconcile what we did wrong a long time ago. And if there's anything in this postmodern, politically correct, relativistic, materialistic, neo-Darwinistic culture that they will despise more than any word, it's truth. Because it tells them there's an absolute immutable force that has established what is true about humans. And it's, I don't have, you know, in your concept outside of that is wrong and a lie. Well, relativism can't put up with that, because then it means I'm responsible to somebody else.
Yeah.
It's what the neo-atheists most despise, because they are the original sin. They're right back to where Satan was.
Yeah.
I will be God. Yeah. I will just make the rules. I will create it. So that is why I think men can be leaders in that idea of movement. And I wanted to tell the truth at Godman. I wanted to show our flaws. I wanted to show our junk. I wanted to show our we had a Q&A where you were allowed to be. Women weren't allowed.
Yeah, I
to
remember.
Come so that we could just see if we could get down to it.
But we had one female reporter from
the
LA Times.
There was a female from the LA Times, yes, and she came. And it was the first time, by the way, and it, like you said, I've done lots of media in my life. I have been on, you know, from the conservative stuff, I've done Sean Hannity, I've been on Glenn Beck, I've been on Fox and Friends, all that. I've been on CNN. I've been on Fresh Air, NBC Nightly News. I've been on Nightline. I mean, I've done everything.
Yeah.
New Yorker Magazine did a whole article on me, you know, 10-page profile on me in 2004. So I've been through the gamut, and the only time I was ever spun was that LA Times article where they said that I said that Christians are supposed to curse.
Yeah.
The article says, like, Christians should curse.
Yeah.
And then they had an expletive that I said, a scatological term that they said I said. And I was like, where did they come up with that?
Yeah.
I did a joke about it's not fair that Christians don't have curse words, which is in my album. I said, it's not fair because I don't care how holy you are. You slam your hand on a car door, something's coming out of your mouth. That's all I'm saying. We need curse words for Christians. So I made a joke about it. But they kind of put it together to act like this movement was us going around saying we're supposed to curse.
Yeah.
That is not what happened.
Yeah.
But what was really saddening and disheartening was that some Christians picked up on that article and didn't hire me, you know, to come into some of their events that I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Without calling me and saying, did you, is this what you're believing now? Is this what you're like, no, that's not what we said. So again, the judgment, happens and unfortunately it was, but other than that, the men that were there, as you know, were healed. There was amazing, it was an amazing day.
Yeah.
And wonderful things happened. And we tried it again and guys that went loved it. And here was the thing too. I spoke earlier about, you know, don't judge anything. But I also said to them, when it's over, we'll evaluate.
Yeah.
If we think we did something wrong, we'll fix it. If we think we've offended somebody somehow and it was not from God, we'll apologize. We're not saying that you don't have the right or the expectation to do that thing which is holy and righteous. But we might mess up. So can we just have that privilege for once to not have to worry about that? And if you were given that opportunity, then I think God can do amazing, wonderful things. And I think that, you know, you're with Samson Society, you have a piece of that puzzle because it's an amazing place for men to go. And I think it's important that I mention, you know, that the more you and I have talked, you know, we want to go out and do some men's events. I've been wanting to do this for quite a while because I have a couple of guys that I like to work with in men's events. But for you and I to go out and do some comedy, you tell your amazing story, your thing about Samson Society. I have this healing weapon that God gave me when it came to addiction, when it came to pornography.
Yeah.
It's an amazing men's night. So if you want to have a night at the men's hut, give Nate a call because you don't have my address. You have this.
Well, all inquiries, of course, can come to Samson Society. And we love your letters. You send those to letters@samsonsociety.org. But you got a website as well, don't you, Brad?
I do. I have bradstine.com.
And that's S-T-I-N-E.
I-N-E, like fine wine. Yes, it's spelled differently. I also am starting to be a blogger on beliefnet.com. And, you can go to my store. You can get DVDs. You can get books. You can get
those cute Brad Stein tank tops.
The tank tops, well, the frilly ones. Yeah, I ran out of the other ones. And of course, things for your wife, t-shirts. I don't know. There's tons of things, but I think it's crucial that you call now and buy everything because my kids are hungry.
Well, Brad, you can stick around, right? I have designated you. I hope you don't mind. I designated you celebrity guest host today, which means you get to participate in interviewing a remote guest.
I see.
Can
so
you
is
stay
that why I got
that?
The free banana then? Is that what that's for? Yeah, I would be happy to stay at the remote.
I hate to break it to you, but everybody gets the free
How
banana.
Remote is, though? What they do? How remote is this guest?
She's down in Florida. I met her a couple of weeks ago. As I was working in the safety of a Starbucks, as my wife staffed a booth for Triple X Church at the Miami Porn Show.
Well, I think I will stick around.
We'll be right back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
If I had my way, if I had my a lot of Snub nose and coal black hair. Delilah, she came on Samson's mind. First he saw this woman with a Philistine.
That was our song of the week from Ashley Cleveland, Samson and Delilah, from her album God Don't Never Change. There's a woman, Ashley Cleveland, who knows a little bit about recovery. What an awesome lady. And I heard her sing that song a couple weeks ago at a human sexuality conference. It was quite an experience. We hope to have her on the broadcast. Now, we have got a special guest now, Brad, making a phone call down to Florida to talk to a young lady I met a couple of weeks ago. We'd corresponded earlier, but a couple of weeks ago I met her and her husband from the safety of a Starbucks here in Miami Beach. As Allie was working the XXX Church booth at the Miami Porn Show.
I see.
Justine Jacobs is on the line with us. Hi, Justine.
Hello.
How are you?
How are you? I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for giving up a little of your time here on Memorial Day to join us on the Pirate Monk podcast. You know.
Yeah, thank you. It's exciting.
To me, one of the most dangerous aspects of pornography is that it dehumanizes the subject. It objectifies women for the male user. A guy who's using porn regularly, just flipping through the hundreds and thousands of images, soon forgets that those are real people. And pretty soon, every woman he meets is really not a person, but just a body or a collection of body parts. It's a soul.
Right.
It's a soul killing thing. And so, I'm so grateful that you came on the podcast to help remind our listeners that those are real people out there with real stories,
yeah,
with real struggles, and that it's not all as pretty and beautiful as the pornographers would make it appear. So you actually had this wasn't something that was part of your career plan, was it, Justine?
No, absolutely not.
But through a strange set of circumstances, a few years ago, I'm not quite sure exactly when it happened. You found, when did this whole story start for you, Justine?
It started. This aspect of my story started in 2006.
Okay.
And at the time, I was trying to pursue a career in modeling and acting, but not this specific form of modeling.
Sure. Yeah. So you answered an innocuous ad, one for non-nude modeling, right?
Yes, that is correct. It was for a non-nude model for, I forget however many photos. It was for $2,500.
Okay, $2,500. They're going to take some pictures of you, and you go in for the interview. And charming people?
How many people?
No. Are these charming people in the interview? Do you like the people who interview you?
Oh, yeah. I was mainly in contact with the photographer, and he was a very, very nice guy.
Uh-huh.
Very down to earth. And I felt immediately comfortable talking to him about my pros and cons of what I felt of the situation.
Right, yeah. Now, you were a new Christian at the time, and he told you that he was a Christian as well. Is that true?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that is true. He actually had a background in education concerning theology.
Wow. Okay.
So I trusted a lot of what he said.
And suddenly you find yourself in a very morally ambiguous atmosphere, and the suggestion is made that you could probably earn some more money. Go ahead.
We corresponded for a few months. I want to say 2 to 4 or 5 months. I don't really remember.
Mm.
And it was just back and forth of talking about really just the pros and cons. And I had really where my mind was, I was going to do the non-nude.
Mm-hmm.
My mind was already there. I had already done a couple projects with an independent film and things where I had to take my shirt off. So I was comfortable already with that. And
mm-hmm.
so I was definitely 100% doing non-nude.
Yeah.
And it was him telling me, now I'm building a trust with this man. And the main factor was, number one, doing nude would be more money.
Mm-hmm.
But number two, I would exclusively be with him. He would be my exclusive photographer. If I had done non-nude, I didn't know who I was going to shoot with.
I see. Okay.
And because I had spent a couple months talking to him, it really meant something to me that I would be able to just be with this person and, mm-hmm. and trust him and know him.
Hmm. So arrangements are made. There is more money. How much more money?
It was the, let's see, it would be 20 videos, 20 20-minute videos with, I think, 10 sets of photos, 100 photos per set,
mm-hmm.
was $5,000.
Okay. And so you sign the contract, you go for the shoot. Was it fun?
It was actually a lot of fun. So there were aspects that definitely weren't, but in the beginning it was fun because I felt so beautiful and I was getting outfits bought for me and shoes, and he had a girl who was an assistant and we were doing makeup, and the steps are fun, you know, whatever, you're eating pizza or you're mm-hmm. doing whatever that you do normally, and so it was a good time. And then there were, toward the end, it was shot over a period of 9 days. And towards the end, from changing clothes so much, I gave him way over the amount of photos that the contract was for. Mm. And by changing clothes so much, I had this rash. You couldn't see it, but I could feel it. And
yeah.
I did this one set where I had to go in a hot tub, and it was like going in a hot tub with the worst sunburn you can think of.
Wow.
And that's when I really started to not have a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. How many photos do you think the guy shot over those 9 days?
I think he ended up with over 15,000 photos.
Wow.
Definitely enough content to last 2 years to make it look like new current content for 2 years.
Now, in your understanding from the start, was that these photographs were destined for a subscription website. Is that true?
Yes, okay. A Solo Girl website.
Okay. So guys on the web would be teased by some pictures of you. They'd be drawn to the site. From there, they'd be encouraged to subscribe, where they could form kind of a cyber relationship with you, and they could get to know you better than other people would know you, and they could read your daily your blogs and maybe correspond with you. Is that how it was supposed to run?
Yeah, the idea was I would be working from home, and I would do the journal entries, the diary entries, and as well as we were going to incorporate a webcam to have live chats.
Oh my!
And yeah, and then every day or every week, I forget, there'd be new content as if I just shot it.
Right.
As if it was just done.
But you got back home, and the more you're thinking about it, the more you're praying about it, the worse you feel about it, and you realize you've made a huge mistake.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, to this day, the strongest, hurtful conviction I've ever felt about a decision that I had already previously made.
Yeah.
It was like my heart just got ripped out of my chest. Mm. And all I could do was cry.
Yeah. Now, what you have at this point is you've got a commitment from the pornographers for ongoing income. This is going to be a steady job for you.
Mm-hmm.
But you're so smitten in your conscience, you realize you can't be doing this. You call up to tell them you're not going to take the job. How did they react?
Well, I actually called the webmaster, who I had less contact with, but at this time I actually felt like he was the better person to talk to you about this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called the webmaster, and I just told him how I felt. I was sobbing, and he didn't understand where I was coming from because he's not a Christian,
mm-hmm.
but he was very willing to, we were on the phone for a long time because he was asking me questions. He really tried to see where I was coming from. He really tried to understand, and he felt bad, and he wanted to try to make it as comfortable as he could have so that I would continue on with it. And all in all, it ended with him saying, well, your contract is done. You're not obligated to continue on with this. However, I will still go on with this site. I am still going to launch it.
Yeah.
This was about a month after I had shot all the content.
So now, and how much time elapsed between that conversation and when the website actually launched?
Well, I shot the website in February, So I guess we had the conversation sometime in March, April, and the website launched in March the next year,
okay.
March 2007.
Yeah. Now, what did you anticipate as a reaction from family and friends? Did you think that people who knew you would learn about this?
No, absolutely not. One of the unfortunate factors in doing it was the fact that I was very convinced no one was ever going to find out. I had seen sites with millions upon millions of sites of girls and thought if my name were in there, you know, who would know?
Yeah.
And within a week of the site launching, everybody in my life knew about it. My mom, my whole family, my peers.
Mm. Mm. And what repercussions has that had for you within your family and within your career? You're working on getting a career started.
Yeah. That's the most devastating part. You know, it's one thing to deal with something by yourself that you've done and that has only affected yourself, but this affected everybody that loves me. And everybody that, even people that don't even love me, especially the relationship with my mom, we had some strain before, but when she found out about this, any hope, any glimpse of hope that I had for a reconciled relationship with her seemed to be over completely, 100%. And she's the one who said that. And she was just completely heartbroken.
Yeah.
And she wasn't the only one in my family that was heartbroken. So the family aspect is still hurting to this day.
Mm.
4 years later, well, really 3 years later from the launch.
Yeah.
Still hurting very much. As far as a career, now I have chosen to talk about this.
Yeah.
So it does make it a little bit different. However, the site is still out there. It's still current. And if I'm going to have a job that, you know, is sort of a, you know, like a Starbucks job or something like that, I don't feel the need to broadcast it by any means. But I feel obligated, if I'm going to be representing a company, be the face of a company, that they need to be on the same page. And it's only fair to them.
Yeah.
And I don't have a job like that. And it's because of that reason. It's because I would like to take this time to focus on talking about it without feeling the pressure of letting down a company.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's real. I mean, it is really, you know, my college degree is being used because I actually do things that have something to do with it. But as far as getting a job, it's basically, you know, I could have just not as gone to college, basically.
Yeah, my. What's your message to, first of all, what's your message to young ladies? You know, nowadays, porn is becoming, it's moving more and more into the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Porn stars are showing up on Oprah. This is being touted as a good career move, as something that might be fulfilling, even glamorous. What you say to young ladies who might, in the back of their minds, be entertaining a fantasy of this type?
Well, first and foremost, no matter how desperate you are, there is other ways to make money.
Mm.
And it might not be as much money, but if you would just be willing to, you know, work your butt off at you know, a job that doesn't pay as much, and even be humble enough to ask people to help you, they will if they knew that that was your last resort.
Mm.
Be honest with yourself. There's always other forms of ways to make money out there. But mainly it's just to educate yourself. This starts, I want everyone to know, not just young ladies, that this starts when we're growing up as young girls and the messages that we're being fed. As I said, I was already doing non-nude because to me it was perfectly okay.
Mm.
And that was because of all the false truths that society and movies and men had told me. You know, In eighth grade, I was taking nude photos for my boyfriend.
Mm.
Because that's what we thought we were supposed to do for each other if we loved each other.
Wow.
And it's more than a misconception of body. It's a misconception of love and just the way that we're being taught. And I would encourage every woman to educate yourself on porn and what it does, because most likely the man that you end up with is looking at it or has looked at it, and whether or not he wants to or not, it's going to affect your life. It's going to affect your future family. And you need to know what to do about it. You need to know how to react in a situation and what's healthy. And also the fact that porn has nothing to do with you as a woman, as far as how beautiful you are and what your worth is.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, it is your competition, and that's what you need to be aware of, that it is out there. It's not just the dirty man in the room that's one in every 20 men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this affects a lot of men.
Yeah.
You know, Nate, that was one of the things that stuck out to me as she was speaking. Of everything that she said was when she began to get the pictures taken, she said, "I felt so beautiful."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're putting on your clothes, you're putting on, I mean, for women, they just, you know, especially little girls, I have a daughter, you know, that's just so important to them. You know, they love to put on their clothes, and I'm not even talking about sexually provocative stuff. They just like to have cute clothes on, or look at this cute top, or this shoes.
Yeah.
They love that, and it makes them feel beautiful.
Yeah.
And so I think porn, for women oftentimes, taps into that brokenness of needing to feel beautiful. And so to have this fantasy that all these men, you know, desire them, gives them a sense of, you know, I'm valuable. I'm worth something. And what's ironic about that is most of the men who are looking at porn are in the same boat. They're so broken.
Yeah.
That they feel like somebody likes me, that a girl thinks I'm worth something, that I'm valuable, that I'm, you know, a man and strong and admired. And I think that that's what's really ironic, is that both people are using each other because they're broken.
And in the middle, the pornographers are making a fortune.
Oh, of course, because they don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care about you or anyone. And if there has been a more, you know, mixed message and a disservice to women in our culture, it's that that there hasn't been more, you know, feminists who are certainly out there with, you know, get an abortion, it's your right, you know, that they haven't used the same passion to say women are not slaves. To be bought and sold for somebody's desires.
Yeah, yeah.
It just shows how misconstrued their worldview is when it comes to what actually matters about a human spirit and a soul. So I think it's interesting that you started out wanting to just take some pictures looking, you know, in your dress or your outfits. And sooner or later, you know, you begin to trust a man, and he says, you know, if you just did that, it would be a little bit more money, but boy, then you would really, and it's that trust, that little girl heart, that trust, you know, that man that suddenly is being exploited. So, it sounds like you're strong and kind of have realized, okay, made a mistake, we all do. You're trying to learn from it, you're trying to teach others from it, and so what more can you do? But find a positive way to move forward. So blessings on you for that.
Yeah, your story now is going to be a life. Your life now is going to be a story of redemption.
Mm.
Yes.
And it's wonderful to live a life dedicated to redemption.
And I believe there can be redemption with your mom. I think that can happen. I think that, you know, over time, you can even find a healing there. That certainly would be something that we could pray with you and walk with you on, because that's an important thing for a little girl to have her mom back. So I pray for that for you.
Anything in particular you'd like to say to the guys listening to the podcast, Justine?
Well, same for the women. Educate yourself.
Mm.
And, you know, there are women out there like me. I do have a site and a blog. You can find my blog through justinejacobs.com. And just something that has stuck out to me through men sending me emails is that, you know, oh, when they find somebody, when they're looking for something they're not supposed to be looking for, and then they find somebody, and then they actually sort of have a conversation with that person, and it's a conversation just, this is what I did today, or, you know, this is how this experience affected me. All of a sudden, a reality check hits,
mm-hmm.
and they realize that they are conversating with a real person.
Yeah.
And so I would just say, number one, educate yourself. And I'm not just representing myself. I'm representing every single girl in the industry who has a story, and every single girl in the industry has a past.
Yeah.
And for the men listening that are Christian and are struggling with, you know, wherever they've been concerning pornography, I just want to encourage you, Nate, and everybody listening, and just to be honest and be transparent with other men in your life, because honesty and safety are the most important aspects to coming out of something that you've been doing your entire life, really.
Yeah.
You know, this has been affecting you too since you were a young man, and it's not an easy thing to stop, you know.
Yeah. It's a powerful, powerful, powerful drug, and there are victims on both sides of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Justine, thank you so very much for joining us on the Pirate Monk podcast.
Absolutely.
And look forward to seeing you again sometime when we're back down there
you
in
too.
Florida.
You too. Thank you, and nice to meet you.
Yes, you too, Justine. I appreciate your candor, and fight well. You sound like a strong woman, and I'm sure you got a lot of great great things ahead of you in your life.
Allie sends her love, Justine.
Oh, thank you. Tell her I said hello.
Okay, all right. So long.
Okay, have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, Brad, that was quite a story Justine had.
Yeah.
I agree with you. The most emotional moment, the telling moment for me, was when she described her feelings, those giddy feelings early on in the shoot where she said she felt so beautiful. And it was about the clothes and about the makeup and about
right.
the and how vitally important it is for her to feel beautiful.
Right.
You know, one of the things that breaks my heart is that for so many years I allowed pornography to blind me to the beauty of my wife.
Yeah.
I'm married to a very beautiful woman, but I was allowing a huge money-making industry in Southern
right.
California to describe beauty for me,
right.
To define it for me every day, and to put me in this comparative head where I'm just comparing one body against another. And I'm grateful now that I see the beauty of my woman.
Yeah.
And I'm able to tell Allie every day how beautiful she is.
Right.
It's almost a way of giving her oxygen.
Yeah, right.
And it does, and it really helps our relationship and our marriage.
Yeah.
I need to know that I am strong and trustworthy and capable. I need to have her respect. And she needs to have my love. And she also needs to know from me, I'm the biggest mirror in my wife's life.
Mm.
That's true of dads and little girls, too. Little girls are looking at dads. And the question in their mind is, am I pretty, Daddy? Am I beautiful? So fathers out there, do not neglect your daughters. Do not forget to tell the women in your life that they are beautiful.
Amen. Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And it's, you know, what's really interesting about men in when they deal with pornography is, you know, it's like any drug. When you talk to a heroin addict, you talk to anybody, that first one was the one that got you hooked. But from then on, you spent the rest of your life trying to catch that first high.
Yeah.
Pornography is the same, is that you try to find that first high. And what is ironic, if a man gets this, is when you aren't looking at that, when you're not allowing yourself to have a release without intercourse with your wife, when you are disciplining that thing, what you really do end up getting is what you really wanted, which is this amazing sexual relationship with your wife, because you use it. Dave Bunker said it once, you know, at a meeting, Godman, that I thought was so cool, was he said, you're giving away your power.
Yeah.
And I think, what a great way to frame it, because if I save it, then suddenly the desire for the sex that you're not usually going to get as often as you want as a guy is going to build up. And when that experience comes with your wife, it's this amazing, oh man, this is the way it was supposed to be. So you can find that exciting explosion that can happen, that you got the first time with your marriage. So that to me is what's kind of interesting for guys, is if you can put it where it belongs,
in
the context it belongs, you'll actually end up getting what you're looking for all along. And so don't cheapen it, and don't lessen the experience you want when it can be had with the real wife. So anyway, it doesn't make it easier, but it certainly makes it worth waiting for. I've certainly discovered that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to close here with a letter from a listener.
Ah.
And right on theme, this one is from one of our female listeners.
I see.
One of the
chickmunks.
Christina writes, thank you for your podcast. My husband and I listen to it every week and are extremely grateful. I have a question about confrontation. Do you have any advice to wives about how to confront their husbands? Obviously in a respectful manner, but what do you suggest? What would it look like exactly? Well, Christina, time is running out on this episode of the Pirate Monk podcast, so here's what we're going to do. We'll give you a thoughtful answer on next week's podcast. I'd also like to invite listeners with suggestions or supplemental questions to write to us this week at letters@samsonsociety.org. What do you think of Christina's question? And then next week's going to be special. There'll be...
It's more special than me?
I'll tell you what. This is the one broadcast, Brad, that's going to be more special than you because...
Huh. Well, then I'll even tune in.
The elusive Allie Larkin, my beautiful bride.
Ah.
The woman who I get more questions about than anything else.
Is going to come on and confront you.
No, that has been done.
I see. Okay.
But she doesn't like to speak publicly, but she has consented to an interview with the Pirate Monk podcast. So those of you who have some curiosity about the woman behind the man, the story, the untold story, you want to get it straight from the woman herself.
You going to tease us with some of the topics you guys are going to talk about and ask her about? That should be interesting, that you are interviewing your wife about the story that...
That's right.
That you have spoken of for so long. I mean, how is this going to play out exactly? You're going to ask her take on all this this life that God has given you and all the things you've exposed to the world and how
well
she
actually
perceives that?
In the interest of full disclosure, let me tell you that the interview has already been recorded.
Oh.
It was recorded. Aaron Porter from California conducted the interview. I sat in the room and defended myself at a couple points. But it was a fun time. My wife is liable to say most anything.
Okay.
So it'll be an entertaining show.
Well, I can't wait to hear it.
Until then, thank you for tuning in to the Pirate Monk Podcast from SamsonSociety.org. Oh,
every day is so wonderful, and suddenly it's hard to breathe. Now and then I get insecure from all the pain, from so ashamed.
Don't you bring